I offer my respectful obeisances unto His Divine Grace Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, who is very dear to Lord Krishna, having taken shelter at His lotus feet. Shivar Shavanavi Devi Dayataya Kripabdhaye Krishna Sambandha Vijnana Dayane Prabhave Namaha. I offer my respectful obeisances to Shivar Shavanavi Devi Dayatadas. This is the name that he was given by Gorkishore, that's Babaji Maharaj, at the time of initiation, who was favored by Srimati Radharani and who is the ocean of transcendental mercy and deliverer of the science of Krishna. Madhuryojvala Premadya Sri Rupa Anuga Bhaktida Sri Gaura Karuna Shakti Vigrahaya Namostute. I offer my respectful obeisance unto you, the personified energy of Sri Chaitanya's mercy, who delivered devotional service which is enriched with conjugal love of Radha and Krishna, coming exactly in the line of revelation of Srila Rupa Goswami. Namaste Gauravani Sri Murtaye Dinatarine Rupa Anuga Virudha Pasidhanta Dvanta Harine. I offer my respectful obeisances unto you, who are the personified teachings of Lord Chaitanya. You are the deliverer of the fallen souls. You do not tolerate any statement which is against the teachings of devotional service enunciated by Srila Rupa Goswami. So thank you. Thank you very much for this opportunity. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur is such a great personality. It's really hard to figure out what to say about him. There's so much. So I've sort of decided to present it in my usual fashion by over-preparing. So I want to start with this poem that Prabhupada wrote, I believe in 1936, not too long, actually before the disappearance of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. And he opens like this, adore ye all the happy day, blessed in heaven, sweeter than May, when he appeared at Puri, the holy place, my Lord and Master, his divine grace. So today's the appearance day. So Prabhupada's glorifying that day, that happy day, he says, when, and he compares it to spring, the spring season, even sweeter than that, he says. And he appeared at Puri because that was where Bhaktivinoda Thakur was posted at the time. He was the district magistrate for Jagannath Puri, and he also had responsibility to see to the affairs of the temple there. And so therefore he took his birth in that place, and so many things took place at that time. But there was a particular line, set of lines in this poem, this great poem that Prabhupada wrote, glorifying Bhaktisiddhanta, which, and these are the lines that Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati noted. And when he heard those lines, he said, whatever he writes, even if it scribbles, publish it. So he wrote these lines that Bhaktisiddhanta particularly appreciated. Absolute is sentient, thou hast proved. Impersonal calamity, thou hast moved. This gives us a life, anew and fresh. Worship thy feet, your divine grace. So, in other words, he felt that Prabhupada had captured, our Prabhupada had captured the essence of what Bhaktisiddhanta was trying to do, which was to attack the impersonalism and voidism that was very prominent at that time in India. And so Prabhupada actually, you know, grasped that. And the fact that the absolute truth was a sentient being, was a being, a person, the Supreme Personality. So both of those things came out in those two lines of the poem, and Bhaktisiddhanta is very, very pleased by it. Now, Prabhupada also wrote something else about Bhaktisiddhanta. This comes from the third canto, 22nd chapter, in a purport. He wrote, Kardama Muni desired to beget a child who would be a ray of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. One should beget a child who can perform the duties of Vishnu. Otherwise, there is no need to produce children. There are two kinds of children born of good fathers. One is educated in Krishna consciousness so that he can be delivered from the clutches of Maya in that very life. And the other is a ray of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So you kind of get the impression, just from these words, that he sees Bhaktisiddhanta, and of this song also in this way. He's a very extraordinary personality. As a Shaktivesh avatar, a ray means coming directly from the spiritual world. So he said, the other is a ray of the Supreme Personality of Godhead and teaches the world the ultimate goal of life. Kardama Muni begot such a child, Kapila, the incarnation of the Personality of Godhead, who enunciated the philosophy of Sankhya, in the same order as Kardama Muni about 100 years ago. Thakur Bhaktivinoda also wanted to beget a child who could preach the philosophy and teachings of Lord Chaitanya to the fullest extent. By his prayers to the Lord, he added his child Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Goswami Maharaj, who at the present moment is preaching the philosophy of Lord Chaitanya throughout the entire world through his bona fide disciples. Now, it's interesting phrasing there. I think some of you may have noticed that that was Prabhupada's vision, that it was Bhaktisiddhanta preaching through him and through his other disciples in different parts. He was kind to include all these other disciples because actually, at that time, at least when this was written, he was the only one that was preaching Krishna consciousness throughout the entire world. But at least in part of the world, his godbrothers, many of them were still active and trying their best. So he gave them credit in his purport, which is kind of a nice thing. So I'm going to initially do a little bit of a slideshow and then maybe read certain selections from the writings of Bhaktisiddhanta, which I thought would be appropriate and interesting. I hope they will be. I'm going to try to share my screen now and click on this. All right, so I'm about to start this now. The way I have to do it is go to slideshow and from the beginning. So here we have in this first shot, photograph. This is Sri Bhagavati Devi, who's the mother of Bhaktisiddhanta. She was actually the Thakur's second wife because the first wife died during childbirth. And had one son. But then with Bhagavati Devi, they had about 14 children altogether. So I think 13 with Bhagavati Devi. But she was a great Vaishnavi herself. She was a powerful Vaishnavi. In fact, it was partly due to her urging that Bhaktisiddhanta was so eager to spread Krishna consciousness to the West. It was also, of course, Bhaktivinoda Thakur's ardent desire that Krishna consciousness be spread throughout the world. But his mother was just as eager. In fact, because she outlived Bhaktivinoda Thakur, that was one of her main final, I don't know if you want to call it an order, but she urged Bhaktisiddhanta towards the end of her life, please spread this Krishna consciousness to the rest of the world. So that was one of the driving forces for him. Of course, here this is Bhaktivinoda Thakur, the father and guru, practically Shiksha guru for Bhaktisiddhanta. From a very early age, he nurtured Bhaktisiddhanta. He gave him an Ashringa mantra to chant. He taught him how to do deity worship. He involved him in all of his printing and printing work, his publication work. And so he learned the whole art of publication, of newspapers, magazines, books, all at the feet of his father. So here we have some of the family members of like you said, he's in the left, at least on my screen, the upper left. He looks very like a very sublime, otherworldly sort of character in this picture. Bhagavati Devi is on the far right, Bhaktivinoda, of course, in the middle. I believe the brother next to Bhaktisiddhanta there is Lili Prasad, who had some philosophical differences with Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, but both very elevated Vaishnavas. Okay. Now, here is a picture of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur as a 7-year-old child. Now, I'm sure some of you have heard some of these stories before, but there's the famous mango story, of course, that he once took some mangoes that were actually intended for the deity, worship of the to be offered to the deity. And he was mildly rebuked. Prabhupada calls it, he mildly was rebuked by Bhakti Vinod as a child. And he took it so seriously that for the rest of his life, he would never accept mangoes, even if they were offered to him. He would never accept. He said, no, I'm an offender. I'm an offender. So this is part of which, this is partly what is characteristic of these great personalities. Now, if you look at the face of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur here, it's easy to understand that he was not an ordinary. If you look at the eyes, for instance, of Bhaktisiddhanta, he doesn't look like a child. He already looks something like a sage. At least that's my perception. He already looks like a very powerful sage. So he was very extraordinary right from birth. First of all, he had eidetic memory. Means like photograph, what we call photographic memory. He memorized all the verses of Bhagavad Gita by the time he was about this age, as you see him here. And he could explain the verses. Not just that he wrote, I mean, of course, one thing to have a good memory and be able to memorize lots of verses, but he also could explain them. Yeah, so he was scholarly all the way throughout. He, throughout his youth, he attended all the lectures of Bhaktivinoda Thakur, and he used to study the books of Bhaktivinoda Thakur rather than his regular lessons that they wanted him to study in school. But then they were a little upset by it, but then whenever they would ask him any questions about what they'd covered in class, he could answer them perfectly. Of course, it was a big help to have that eidetic memory, I guess, because he could remember everything he heard just even once. In fact, as a young man, he became a tutor to the kings of Tripura, the sons of the king. And at that time, that was a period of between 1895 and 1905. He was acting as a tutor. I think among many other things that he was doing at the time, but he was. The way I would describe it, he was devouring libraries. And the kings were the only people that could afford to have libraries in those days. Vast libraries. And so he would read everything that he could find in these libraries. So this was kind of a pivotal time. There's so much to be said even about his youth. I'm just trying to limit it down a little bit. He took a vow of celibacy, and he established something called the Chira Kumar Sabha. Now, this is Bhaktisiddhanta as a young man. I can't tell you. I wish I had photographs that matched all the different ages, but this is a fairly early on portrait of him. He was very austere. He used to follow Chaturmasya strictly during the period of Chaturmasya, and he would eat only one meal a day, and that was off the floor, like a cow. He'd put his hands behind his back and bend over and eat his meal off the floor. So this is one of the austerities he performed during Chaturmasya. And he took a vow of celibacy also very early on. And he formed this this establishment, Shira Kumar Sabha, which was a group of his friends who all took vows of celibacy, and they discussed the value of it, and they had regular meetings in Beaton Square in Calcutta. And this picture is a little later on, of course, but this was prior to sannyas, and these are some of his friends and associates, first people that came, especially Kunja Bihari Vidyabhushan. It was one of the first people to help Bhaktisiddhanta establish his mission. And also this Paramananda Vidyaratna was a scholarly devotee, the one on the right. And he did a lot of the biographical histories of Lord Chaitanya's associates and the associates of Bhaktisiddhanta as well. He was a kind of a biographer and scholar. And the other one was of the organizer. Kunja Bihari Vidyabhushan was kind of like the organizer. And so Bhaktisiddhanta during this period also studied astronomy and astrology. And he became so good at both. Now this is a little bit later, you can see this is during the period of Chaturmasya. These are also some of his early followers. Here again we see one of his early associates, Paramananda Vidyaratna, who was there with him pretty much from the beginning. But this gives you the idea of the kind of people that he attracted, people that wanted to seriously practice spiritual life and took these vows of celibacy. Then, at a certain stage, while he was reading all of Bhaktivinoda's books, traveling with Bhaktivinoda to different holy places, he also entered the Sanskrit College in Calcutta at the age of 18. So, another picture of Bhaktisiddhanta as a reasonably young, still fairly young man, and much prior to sannyas. So during this time, he didn't have any attraction to married life. People were sort of pressuring him to get married at a certain stage, and he didn't want to have anything to do with it. So he left the college after 3 years, and here's what he had to say about it. He said, "If I remain studying with careful attention at the college, then extreme pressure will be brought upon me to enter family life. But if I am considered to be foolish and inefficient, then no one will put such an inducement upon me for becoming so engaged." So in one sense, he kind of gave up his Sanskrit studies at that time, just so people wouldn't pressure him to, you know, take a responsible position and ordinary life, get married, have a family, you know, which was the usual standard thing that everybody did. He didn't want any part of it. So he said, "They won't put such an inducement on me if I'm seen as foolish and inefficient." And then he says, "By this consideration, I left the Sanskrit college, and in order to maintain my life for the service of Hari, I was desirous of getting an honest occupation which I could perform with the intention of earning a humble income." So at that time is when he began his work with the royal family of Tripura. Now that was from the period of around 1895 to 1905. So on and off, he was working with this family and tutoring the sons of the king. So his years were basically passed in studying and following strictly Chaturmasya. Even he took the vows where he would study all these things. In 1905, he actually took up, now this is, I'm jumping ahead a little bit, I'm not strictly going according to chronology, but in 1905, for instance, he took this vow that he would chant the same vow as Haridas Thakur. Now, Haridas Thakur used to chant three lakhs of names. It means 192 rounds daily. Now, for us, when we hear that, it sounds inconceivable that anyone could do that. It means practically day and night chanting. 192 rounds, you can calculate yourself how long that might take. But that was the vow, and he vowed to chant a billion names, which means that he was practicing this vow for about 9 years during this period. So this is quite a serious vow, as you can imagine. Now, going back in time now, prior to this, he was mainly a kind of pursuing the path of scholarship, it would seem, and austerity. But this personality showed up. He describes himself, Bhaktisiddhanta describes himself as a bit proud. So I want to read actually how he describes himself. Now, we shouldn't take it too seriously, because he's speaking in a very humble manner. But here's what he said. When he first met his spiritual master, Gaurakishordas Babaji Maharaj, he was so stunned by his presence because Gaurakishore, you know, it was very so renounced that he would, you know, eat whatever he could find. You know, if it was just rice, he would sometimes just soak raw rice in water and eat that. Or if he was particularly hungry and he had nothing to eat, he would eat mud from the Ganges mud. And he would sometimes wear clothes and sometimes not wear clothes. Sometimes he would chant his rounds on knotted cloth. Other times he would use beads. So it was completely unpredictable. He was a kind of almost like an avaduta, but totally on the transcendental platform. And so Bhaktisiddhanta had never met anyone like this. So he was very impressed by him. He had met Jagannath Das Babaji, the Shiksha Guru of Bhaktivinoda Thakur, and he had worked with him to create the calendar that we observe to this day. For all the appearances and disappearances of Lord Chaitanya's associates. But here's what he said when he met Gaurakishore. He says, "I have been busy within this material world, trying to bring sense gratification within the grasp of my hand. I have often thought that by attaining the objects of sense gratification, all my shortcomings will be fulfilled. I often attained different facets that were indeed very rare, but my own personal shortcomings were never mitigated. In this material world, I have had the association of very high-class aristocratic persons. However, seeing their various deficiencies, I could not offer them praise. The most merciful Supreme Lord Sri Gaurasundara, seeing me in such a lamentable condition, at such a time of adversity, gave permission to his two dearmost devotees, Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur and Srila Gaurakishore Das Babaji, to grant their blessings to me, because I was always intoxicated with a worldly false ego, wanting again and again self-appraisal. I deprived myself of my own real benefit. But because of the influence of my previous birth's activities in devotional service, I came into the association of Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur, who was the form of my spiritual well-wisher. My spiritual master, Srila Gaurakishore Das Babaji, would go and visit Bhaktivinoda Thakur and many times would reside with him. Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur, out of his compassion for other living entities, pointed out my spiritual master, Sri Gaurakishore Das Babaji. Upon seeing my spiritual master, the extent of my worldly false ego diminished. I knew that all of the living entities who have taken the human form of life were also fallen and low like myself. But by gradually observing the spiritual character of my master, I realized that only a Vaishnava could reside in this material world and be of exemplary character." So it was largely due to the influence of Gaurakishore. This is Bhakti Siddhanta in a little bit later period, student life, I think. And this is a picture of Bhakti Siddhanta during his periods of austerity. I think he's so thin in these pictures that I think you can probably guess that this may have been the period in which he was performing this Nam Yogya, trying to chant a billion names. At Vrajapatana, and at the birth site of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, which is where he performed these austerities. So you can see the beard, they used to grow their beard during the Chaturmasya. Now here's the only photograph that was ever taken of Gorky Shore. There is a story that I haven't confirmed it yet, but they say that he would never allow his picture to be taken. But this was done after he passed away. Some people say it was done after he passed away. They propped him up and took a picture because he wouldn't allow it during his lifetime. But so in this way, he associated with Gaur Kishore and was very inspired, you know, to follow the path of Gaur Kishore. He wanted to be like him, so which is one of the reasons he took this vow of chanting so many rounds and living a very austere and renounced life. But in 1914 and 1915, first Bhaktivinoda Thakur disappeared, left this world. And in 1915, Gaur Kishore Das Babaji Maharaj left the world. And so he was a little bit, I could say, transcendentally depressed. He didn't know what to do. So some of his followers, he already had followers, so many people would come and listen to him speak and wanted to assist him. And they were encouraging him to become a spiritual master, but he didn't think that he had the qualification to do it. He used to address all these people. He would call them, he would say Prabhu, even people that were his disciples. He would sometimes address as Prabhu. He addressed him at his first Vyas Puja. He said, "My friends, rescuers from danger." That's the way he would address his disciples. So he had a very humble attitude. And he's famous for making this statement. He said, "If a Vaishnava does not do the work of a guru, then the spiritual Vaishnava lineage will stop. Again, if he does the work of a guru, then he becomes a non-Vaishnava. For if a guru thinks I am a guru, then the first U letter in the word guru disappears. The word becomes garu or cow. A real guru does not make disciples and thus remains a guru." So the point is that he didn't want to view anybody as a disciple. He wanted to view them as Krishna's servants and worshipable by him. In fact, he used to, when people offer his obeisance to him, he would respond, "Daso Shmi, I'm your servant. I'm your servant." Prabhupada, about this, on his disappearance day, Prabhupada once said, "Anyway, it is by his grace I was forced to give up my family life, and he brought me some way or other in preaching his gospel. So this is a memorable day. What he desired, I am trying a little bit, and you are all helping me. So I have to thank you more. You are actually representatives of my Guru Maharaj because you were helping me in executing the order of my Guru Maharaj. Thank you very much." So that was Prabhupada's, that mentality of seeing your disciples as representatives of the predecessor Acharya. This is a very elevated type of thinking that was possessed by Bhakti Siddhanta. So that was leading up to this. People were encouraging him, but he was reluctant. So I'm going to go back in time a little bit now again. When Gaur Kishore Das Babaji Maharaj disappeared, there was a big hullabaloo because he was at that time performing his chanting his bhajan in Navadvip. And there was a big argument amongst the various leaders and temple people that had temples in Navadvip about who was going to provide the samadhi for Gaur Kishore. And of course, it was motivated, because they figured if we have a nice samadhi, then so many pilgrims will come and we'll get the money. We'll be able to get lots of donations. So this was the mentality that was prevalent at the time, unfortunately. So this news was brought to Bhaktisiddhanta. And this, again, remember, this is prior to his taking sannyas, shortly before he took sannyas. And so he went to that place where the body of Gaur Kishore was resting on the ground. And it says here, crossing over the river by Kulia's ferry boat. This is the first witness who actually saw all these events take place. Kunja Bihari Vidyabhushan, one of his first followers, gives this rendition of what happened. So it says, crossing over the river by the Kulia's ferry boat, I saw Prabhupada coming with bare feet and covered by a green chadar. With him was Paramananda Brahmachari. It was the period of Chaturmasya. Prabhupada's hair and beard were long. Seeing him, I prostrated in respect and told him in detail what was happening. So then there's a description of, you know, what all these other people were arguing over where the body of Gaur Kishore was going to go. So then there was, during this hubbub, there was, the police inspector had shown up and to try to keep the, you know, keep the peace. And the Babajis that were gathered there said, Saraswati Thakur is not a sannyasi. Therefore, he does not have the eligibility to give the samadhi for a person who has renounced his home. So that was their argument. He's a brahmachari. How can he give the samadhi? In reply to this, Prabhupada said in a loud voice like thunder, I am the only disciple of Paramahansa Babaji Maharaj, which is the truth. Although many people considered Gaur Kishore to be their spiritual master because he would tell them to chant Hare Krishna, and they thought that was tantamount to initiation. But actually here, according to Bhaktisiddhanta, he was the only disciple. And he's, even though I have not accepted sannyas, I am a celibate brahmachari. And by the grace of Babaji Maharaj, I am not secretly addicted to abominable habits or involved in fornication as some monkey-like people are. Now, these are pretty strong words, because apparently a lot of these sort of pseudo renunciates were engaged in all kinds of nonsense. And so he was basically confronting them directly. He didn't mince words. Bhaktisiddhanta was very famous for being very outspoken and straightforward. So here he says, I am not secretly addicted to abominable habits or involved in fornication as some monkey-like people are. If there is someone amongst the people present who is a renunciate of truly stainless character, then he can give Babaji Maharaj the samadhi. We have no objection to that. He who within the last 1 year or the last 6 months, 3 months, 1 month, or at least within the last 3 days has not had any illicit contact with the woman will be able to touch this spiritually blissful body. If anyone else touches it, he will be completely ruined. Hearing these words, the inspector of police said, how will evidence be had for this? Prabhupada said, I will have faith in their words. We became amazed at seeing them all after Prabhupada's words. One by one, they turned their backs and went and left. The inspector of police was speechless. So then Bhaktisiddhanta gave the example of how when Haridas Thakur died, how Lord Chaitanya was. Because there was a, in humility, Gaur Kishore once declared that after he passed away, he wanted to have his body dragged through the streets of Mayapur so he could get the dust. I mean, of Navadvip, he wanted to be have his body dragged through the streets so that he could bathe in the dust of the Dham. And Bhaktisiddhanta said, no, that's not the way you treat a great a great soul like this. So he took the body and he established the samadhi. And there's a whole long history of how that samadhi was established. So then he didn't know, after the disappearance of both his gurus, he didn't quite know what to do. And people were urging him to preach, to become a guru, to take disciples. So he couldn't decide. And then it says on one evening he was staying at this Janmasthan, or the yoga pit of Mayapur, and he had this visionary experience, this trance-like experience. And it says that at that time, that the whole area became effulgent. And all these personalities showed up, Jagannath Das Babaji, Bhaktivinod, Gaurakishore, and other previous acharyas. And they gave him many assurances, and this is apparently what they told him. Don't worry, don't you worry at all. With supreme enthusiasm, preach the conclusion of pure devotion. All of us will help you. There's no need to worry. The support of unlimited people, countless wealth, and boundless learning await the blessing of being engaged in the service of your preaching. They will be received when they are necessary. No type of worldly hindrance or danger will be able to make any obstruction for this great work of yours. We are always with you. So this was the the amazing situation. I'm leaving out so many things, but anyway, here's Bhaktisiddhanta. This is a painting done by one of Prabhupada's disciples, Bhaktisiddhanta, having taken sannyas. He took sannyas at the age of 44 from a picture of Gaurakishore, which is an unusual way to take sannyas, but he had nobody else. He had no godbrothers or godsisters even. So this is how he did it. He took sannyas. And the reason he took sannyas was because he felt that there were so many fake Babajis, inauthentic Babajis, who were not even following the strict principles of Krishna consciousness. And these persons are being compared to personalities like Gaurakishore and Bhakti and Jagannath Das Babaji, and for that matter, his father, who also, at last stage of his life, became a Babaji. And so he took sannyas to show that he was one step below them, because that was the Paramahansa platform. This Babaji platform is supposed to be for Paramahansas, totally liberated, exalted Vaishnavas. So he took the position within Varnashram of taking sannyas. And that was his humility that he did so. This was also a little bit later on. This was taken in the 29th of March. This picture was 2 days after he took sannyas. This picture was taken. So this would have been in the 29th of March, 1918. Now here, this is a picture of Bhaktisiddhanta. This, on his right is this Gunja Bihari, who later became Bhaktitirtha Maharaj, who sort of was at least partly responsible for the breakup of the Gaudiya Mutt. But at the time, he did tremendous service for Bhaktisiddhanta in terms of organizing and setting up his preaching in Calcutta and various parts of India. He was kind of like the right-hand man as far as getting things done, organizing. That's kind of a classic picture, very formal. Most of the pictures in those days were pretty formal. You know, it's not like like today if people have, you know, 6,000 pictures of their father or something. And, you know, in those days there would be a few pictures taken, and usually in a very formal setting. So, but this is a nice shot. Here he is. Now, this picture was taken en route. I found out some of this information from Bhakti Vikash Maharaj's three-volume book about Bhakti Siddhanta Vaibhava. Three volumes, amazing research. In this picture, they were on their way to Naimisharanya, the forest of Naimisharanya, in this vehicle. And this is all new, all this, the things that he introduced, traveling in vehicles like this, radio broadcasts, doll exhibits, prasadam distribution, circumambulations of the holy places. If you examine the innovations of Bhaktisiddhanta, they were all innovations Prabhupada adopted also when he took Krishna consciousness to the Western world. So these are just illustrative of that period. Here he is with, this is in Dhaka, in which the huge exhibition was being held there, in which they had the diorama exhibits and all so many different kinds of exhibitions were arranged. So this is a group of his followers. Now you can see right at his feet here is, again, Kunja Vihari, who was always kind of like his general for organizing things. But all these personalities were very dedicated to Bhaktisiddhanta. Here's another interesting shot coming. This is Bhaktisiddhanta at Rajapatana, at Lord Chaitanya's place. And he had hosted all these dignitaries from, you can see some people are from the clergy, some people are, look like they're from government offices, some of them are sympathizers, quite a mix of people. And Bhaktisiddhanta, the head of the table, arranging, you know, for them nice prasadam and giving them a tour, preaching to them about the divine nature of this holy spot. Now here we have the shot of him with, again, we have these two right-hand men, Kunja Vihari and Vidyaratna, Paramananda Vidyaratna, number two and number six. These were right with him right from the very beginning. I have a list of all the Vikash Maharaj lists all the names of the people in this photograph, which I'm not going to read the long list, but some of the great personalities of the Gaudiya Math were included in this shot. Here's a very formal colorized picture of Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Thakur. This picture was taken at the Sri Gaudiya Math in Calcutta. And this is a little later on in his preaching. So many things. He always, together, he established 64 mats. And when he sent his preachers to the West, and they tried their best, they weren't very successful, but they established, they had some meetings with royalty and various personalities in England, of course. They met the king. But they also did some preaching in Germany, in France, in Burma, and various places. So there was an attempt to do worldwide preaching, but they couldn't do, there was a tremendous expenditure to support that. But they came back after a few years and they hadn't had much success. But they tried, and he tried, certainly. And we know that eventually another personality came along who was successful in spreading Krishna consciousness all over the world. Of course, he gave credit to Bhaktisiddhanta for that. Here is another shot. He used to wear a turban and sort of slightly westernized clothing. We have this rather grand overcoat here. And some kind of shoes. It almost looks like spats, but it's not. I don't think it is. But anyway, this is another shot of Bhaktisiddhanta in the later years. This picture was taken in Dhaka, and he explained the first verse of the Srimad Bhagavatam. And for 30 days straight, he spoke about the first verse. And the only thing he said, he could have spoken about it for a much longer period of time, but that was the end of the engagement in Dhaka, so he moved on. But for 30 days, he spoke about just the first verse. This picture is interesting. This is when he's in his 60s. If you notice the sikha, the way his sikha is knotted, it's sort of thin, long, and knotted. And I remember that it was a big deal in the movement in the early days of what kind of sikha you had. There was one school where people had these enormous sikhas. They practically covered the backs of their heads. And then later, when we saw this picture, this devotee that where I first joined said, "Now that's the standard. That's the real standard." And so then people started doing this kind of sikha, long and knotted. So anyway, it's not important, but it's just interesting how people would take things like this very seriously. Here he is in 1932. At the Madras Gaudiya Math with some of his followers and some of the guests. You can see Kunja Vihari is always on the scene. So he was preaching altogether 64 months. That's quite a number, quite a great number. He established Lord Chaitanya's footprints all over India. They were worshipped and in the final couple of years, his preaching became on a very great scale. He was doing radio broadcasts. He was holding huge kirtan festivals, dancing at Rath Yatras, leading huge processions, publication work, magazines, books, just an incredible, storehouse of energy and enthusiasm and just accomplishing so much. He had a tremendous following. Here he's actually with the governor of Bengal at that time, 1935. You notice up above it says "God bless the king." So it's still very much during the British Raj, and we have here he's walking with the heavily garlanded governor of Bengal, who was apparently quite favorable to hearing some preaching from Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. And you see him with his turban, elaborate garlands, with his spats, or what I call spats, but some kind of leather shoes that he would wear when he was meeting Western dignitaries. And so Governor of Bengal, 1935. Again, another shot. This is also John Anderson, who was at that time the governor, 1935. And you can see with this eclectic group of personalities with him, members of the British Raj, a soldier, members of the clergy. Bhaktisiddhanta was reaching out to as many people as he could and trying to influence them. Okay. I was just informed it's 8:10. It's 8:30. Oh, am I supposed to be finished now?
We have a couple more minutes, Prabhuji, don't worry.
Okay, well, here he is with his first batch of sannyasis. He posed for this picture with all the different people he gave sannyas. So you can see the one in the middle is like a giant compared to the rest as far as stature goes. Here again, in this shot, this is at the Madras. No, sorry, this is in Madras, yes, 1932. This is at one of his first Vyasa Pujas. You can see all these offerings at his feet being fanned. Here he's meeting with at the Madhva Gaudiya Math in Dhaka. To the right, E.B.J. Baker, who's a district judge, and J.R. Blair, who's a magistrate of Dhaka. So these are, again, important local personalities. He would always try to meet with them and influence them in any way he could. Here he is with the king of Tripura. Now, this was one of his students, former students, when he was teaching the sons of the king of Tripura. And so he came for the inauguration of the temple, the temple in Mayapur. Here he is, the editor of the Gaudiya. He's actually doing proofreading at this point for the Gaudiya magazine, which is one of their main publications. And the last few shots are just Bhaktisiddhanta basically in his elderly, more elderly years. This one especially. And this one, as far as we know, this is the last picture that was taken of him. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. He passed away in 1937, January 1st. So, I'd just like to take, there's a couple of, just a couple of things, and I put these up on the screen so you could follow them. I just wanted to read a few of these things. As usual, I over-prepared, I have so much material, but I just wanted to get a flavor of his writing. This is from an essay called Real and Apparent, and he subtitles it The Voice of the Soul. So, let's see. The awakened soul says, in effect, to the mind and body, I'm not identical with you. I do not want what you require. I have so long believed that I was identical with yourselves and that our interests were the same. So this is the soul speaking to the mind and body. But I now find that I am really and categorically different from you. Anyway, I'll give you a few seconds just to look and see if you can read it quickly, because we're running out of time. And I wanted to just show one or two more. He talks about declaring his independence from the mind and the body. And that, he said, I shall of course have to stay with you as long as it is intended by Providence that I should suffer the consequences of this unnatural alliance with you. I shall permit you to do only what I consider to be necessary for my well-being. Getting back into my natural position of free conscious existence, unhampered by the unnatural domination, by longing for material enjoyment, I refuse to be any more a slave of the sensuous inclinations of the mind and body. And this is a question that was asked by a German scholar. Do you know the absolute gradually or all at once? And he says it can be all, he basically says it can be all at once, but just, I was just going to read this little portion here. So very poetically stated, like a shooting star, we have strayed out of the range of his attraction. Like a comet, we are journeying without cessation. Our eternal condition is that we are absolute infinitesimals, and as such, we should dovetail with the absolute infinity. The function between him and us is love. He is the lover. If he loves us, we will be taken back. If he has an apathetic tendency towards us, it is because we are averse to him. And we will be undergoing 84 lakhs of births and deaths again and again. It would be judicious for us that we should go back to the absolute infinity, and all our engagement should be with him and not anybody else. So these are the kind of off-the-cuff answers he would give to questions. He would just come out with very, very poetic statements. And here he characterizes the nature of a sadhu and how important it is to associate with them. But the sadhus have a particular characteristic, which he describes, beginning here. the real sadhu makes us speak out what we keep concealed in our hearts. Maybe some of us have experienced this in association with advanced devotees, that you end up saying something you would just soon not have revealed. He then applies the knife. The words, very word sadhu, has no other meaning than this. He stands in front of the block with the uplifted sacrificial knife in his hand. The sensuous desires of men are like the goats. The sadhu stands there there to kill those desires by the merciful stroke of the keen edge of the sacrificial knife in the form of unpleasant language. So he's like, this is how the sadhus cut our illusion with the keen edge of a sacrificial knife in the form of unpleasant language. If the sadhu turns into my flatterer, then he does me harm. He becomes my enemy. If he gives us flattery, then we are led to the road that brings enjoyment, but no real well-being. So here he's glorifying the nature of the sadhu, which he certainly had. Okay. I know our time has been up for a few minutes now, but just some flavor of the life of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. So I don't know if there's time for questions, but if there is, I'm trying my best to answer them.
Thank you so much. What an amazing class. Wow. You just took us on a phenomenal journey, Babaji, especially with that lovely poem by Srila Prabhupada, the ray of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and how he took his vow of celibacy, the mango story, the recitation or memorization of the Bhagavad Gita, and all of these amazing pictures. Phenomenal. We actually have, because of these pictures, we have a question from His Grace Prayojana Prabhu from the temple room. Mm. And he's saying that what an array of amazing pictures, but is there any information about who took them? Was it many of his disciples, one of his disciples, anything that we know about that?
Not much, not really. I mean, some of the captions for these that I read out of some of these pictures were provided by Bhakti Vikash Maharaj, who did a lot of research in India about the life of Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati. Actually, when I first wrote a book about Bhakti Siddhanta called Ray of Vishnu, he did a lot of the initial research for that book. But he wasn't satisfied. He wanted to do so much more. And I think some of you have seen his 3-volume book about Bhakti Siddhanta. And it's just like an ocean of information and pictures. And he provides captions when he could find out where, about as much as he could find out, is where the pictures were taken. But there didn't seem to be much information about who took them. Just people who like Bhaktisiddhanta or who were followers of some kind, not really clear. You know, it wasn't the same kind of media barrage we have these days, where, as I was joking earlier, you could have like 7,000 pictures of your grandfather. Well, you know, in those days, there was just occasionally a snap would be taken, usually in very formal circumstances.
Yes, yeah. Very nice. Thank you so much. And he follows on by saying, in one of the pictures, we see that he only had one tilak on his left arm in one of the pictures. And should he have two tilaks on arms? But I think, obviously, either the picture is faded or not.
Fading because he was very strict about all these things.
Exactly. That's what I thought. Yeah. We have a question here also from Ram Lakshman Prabhu. This is sort of a technical question, perhaps. He says that obviously Bhaktivinoda Thakur initiated, gave him diksha at a very young age. And then Kishordas Babaji Maharaj gave him the Gayatri, the second initiation. Is this correct? We're just trying to understand this.
He wasn't really initiated by Bhaktivinoda. He was given a Nrisinga mantra to chant. Nrisinga mantra. And the diksha was done by Gaur Kishore. But so far as Gayatri goes, Babaji Maharaj they don't give Gayatri Mantra.
Right.
How he got that, how he got Gayatri, I don't know. For that matter, he took sannyas in a very extraordinary way, too. So you could say, well, how can you take sannyas from a picture?
Yeah, the other thing.
The line that was established, the Siddha succession line that was established by Bhaktisiddhanta, was more of a siksha sampradaya than a diksha sampradaya. For instance, Bhaktivinoda Thakur was the disciple of Jagannath Babaji, but by siksha, not by diksha. By diksha, Tipu Bihari Goswami was his diksha guru.
Yeah.
But the main guru in his life was Jagannath Babaji, siksha guru. And then Lord Kishore was not the diksha disciple of Bhaktivinoda. He was, you know, it was all, again, a siksha relationship. And even the relationship of with Gaura Kishore and Bhaktisiddhanta, there was diksha in terms of him giving him a different name and accepting him as his disciple, as his only disciple. But it's a bit of a mystery about the second. They didn't do things quite in the same way then anyway. Sometimes the real diksha was considered when you did get the Gayatri, awarded the Gayatri Mantra. So it's a little mysterious, to be honest. It's a little mysterious. But he considered that Gaura Kishore Das Babaji Maharaj was his guru, heart and soul. But also Bhaktivinoda Thakur he considered his guru. So we can have many gurus, just like Prabhupada's are a Shiksha guru for everyone.
Yeah.
And we have our Diksha guru as well. And sometimes the Shiksha guru is more prominent in the disciple's life than the Diksha Guru, and vice versa. Sometimes the Diksha Guru is both Siksha and Diksha Guru and is the all-in-all for that disciple. So it varies.
Very nice response. Very nice response, because obviously in this day and age, you know, we have many, many Siksha Gurus here in ISKCON currently. We have many, many Diksha Gurus, and, you know, devotees may feel that want to take Diksha or Siksha in many, many aspects of the gurus in that way. And also, so as you said, you know, it's that relationship that we build with them. So nice.
Yeah. Well, everything's based on that. I mean, yes. What is a relationship? Where is the maximum inspiration and commitment coming from? Sometimes, for instance, a Diksha Guru doesn't even have time practically to spend much time with the individual disciples. And so they have to get their nourishment from the Shiksha Gurus. We see that all the time in this kind of thing. Anything else?
Those are all the questions. Thank you so much.